Had the president restricted his target explicitly to the terrorist organization Al-Qaeda, which had carried out the 9/11 attacks, and moved against it through law enforcement means, the Geneva Conventions would indeed not have come into play, and the whole issue of torture could have been avoided. He would have received global cooperation, including from the governments of most Middle Eastern countries, and would surely have been more successful in countering the threat of terrorism than through the route he actually chose. There is widespread agreement among officials in the field, including FBI agents stationed at Guantanamo, that information extracted under torture is usually worthless, that torture largely compels its victims to say what the torturer wants to hear, and that the use of torture precludes building a legal case against a particular captive. Moreover, the people rounded up in Afghanistan usually did not have valuable information, since most of them had been turned over to the Americans by Northern Alliance warlords for the bounties the United States was paying. In October 2004, the deputy commander at Guantanamo, Brigadier General Martin Lucent, said to the press that most of his 550 prisoners had revealed nothing of value. Most of these guys weren't fighting, they were running. The president seems to have authorized torture largely for its symbolic value. The desire of his administration and its neoconservative backers to show the world that the United States was indeed a new Rome, that it could act with impunity, unchecked by any established norms of international law. It was the first sign of the administration's determination to overawe the world with American power, soon enough embodied in the new strategy of shock and awe, the name the military gave its opening cruise missile and bombing salvos against Baghdad in March 2003. Bush himself said to the Washington Post's Bob Woodward, "I had to show the American people the resolve of a commander-in-chief that was going to do whatever it took to win. No yielding, no equivocation, no, you know, lawyering this thing to death, that we're after him." And that was not only for domestic for the people at home to see, it was also vitally important for the rest of the world to watch. "There are only two ways to govern," writes Naomi Klein, the award-winning Canadian journalist, "with consent or with fear." Under George Bush, the United States decided to rule Afghanistan and Iraq through fear, and from this naturally followed disappearances without charges, indefinite detentions, torture, and extraordinary renditions. David Brooks, the right-wing pundit of Rupert Murdoch's Weekly Standard and a columnist for the New York Times, accurately predicted that after 9/11, "we will care a lot more about ends, winning the war, than we will about means. We will debate whether it is necessary to torture prisoners who have information about future biological attacks. We will destroy innocent villages by accident, shrug our shoulders, and continue fighting." In an age of conflict, bourgeois values like compassion, tolerance, and industriousness are valued less than the classical virtues of courage, steadfastness, and a ruthless desire for victory.